out as a war crime because it is.
Formula One's reigning world champ Max Verstappen is still the reigning world champ. Here's CBS's Elizabeth Campbell in Las Vegas.
Viva Las Verstappen. The dominant Formula One racer Max Verstappen claimed his 18th win of the season at the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Drivers averaged speeds of around 147 miles per hour as they raced past the iconic landmarks on the strip. More than 300,000 fans lined the nearly 4-mile track through downtown. Many local businesses, however, wish the city had pumped the brakes on making the Grand Prix an annual event. They say the construction to build the track has caused a dramatic decline in their customers and ask Formula One to improve their plan for next year. Elizabeth Campbell, CBS News, Las Vegas.
Taylor Swift postpones a show in Brazil. CBS's Matt Piper tells us why.
Taylor Swift postponed her Saturday show in Rio de Janeiro due to extreme heat. It's after a fan died at her first Eras Tour concert in Brazil the previous night.
You grew your hair long.
On Instagram, the pop star wrote that she was writing from her dressing room, deciding to postpone due to the heat. There's also video online showing Swift having trouble breathing Friday night after singing Bejeweled. Parts of the country hit 137 degrees earlier this week. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Music mogul Sean Diddy Combs has reached a settlement with singer and model Cassie, who just one day prior accused Combs of rape, sex trafficking, and physical abuse.
The terms of the settlement have not been disclosed. Combs' attorney released a new statement reading, quote, Mr. Combs' decision to settle the lawsuit does not in any way undermine his flat-out denial of the claim.
CBS's Michael George, just minutes into a test flight, SpaceX's mega rocket Starship exploded.
I would definitely classify this as a success.
Former astronaut Garrett Reisman is a SpaceX advisor. He says many of the issues that caused Starship's first test flight to explode back in April were successfully fixed this second go-around.
This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
hey, you got this. Just breathe. Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. 50 today, under clear skies, winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 31 tonight. Overcast skies, tomorrow, 45. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 22.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Helen Brand, and I have been waiting for this moment for what feels like forever, and I think it's just been a week. Today, I am joined by Amanda Dyer, a director and producer, and her husband, Tom Dyer, director and cinematographer. Oh, I said that so many times before I got on here. And they are the makers of the documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here tonight. You know, I have to take one step back now that I said that. You are married, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
That would have been awkward if that was not true, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Amanda and her brother. No. thank you. So thank you guys so much for being here tonight. So after I watched this video twice and wiped away the tears a little bit, I did do a little Google stalking on you two, but don't be worried. I didn't get down to the identity or the social security numbers or anything like that. But what I found was you guys knew absolutely nothing about caring for someone with a profound disability before you started this project. That just blew my mind because you guys nailed it. I mean, you nailed it. And so to come in with no prior experience, I just couldn't believe it. Could you tell me a little bit about how this documentary came to be?
Yeah. I mean, you said it just right. We had no prior knowledge. We weren't aware of families that were going through things like this. We had kind of set out just to do a creative project together. We both work in the creative field, and we just wanted to do something that was a passion project for us. And we stumbled onto this topic. Amanda happened to see a Facebook post of a friend that turned out to be Jess, who is in the film. She had made a comment about this is why I've always said there needs to be a documentary about what families like ours are dealing with. And obviously that kind of stuck out to Amanda, and it turned out that we lived 30, 45 minutes from Jess and her family. And so, we just met up with them and had a lot of questions. We just didn't know anything about, what they were going through or what families like that deal with. And as we started to learn, our jaws just kind of dropped, and, it kind of became a research project for us at that point. And it was something that we just couldn't find a lot of other media or information out there that was a personal experience that, you know, that these families are dealing with for people like ourselves that didn't know anything about it. And that was a big motivation for us, was as we were making the film, we were hoping to make it for people like ourselves that just did not know what these families were going through behind closed doors to open other people's eyes like ours were opened.
And that's the best compliment we get, that it's accurate and true and honest. And we owe that completely to all the families that were willing to share their story and just be open, be honest. We tried to make a space where they could do that and give the platform, but it's totally because they were willing to share and really be vulnerable and say things that are sometimes hard to say. So that, appreciate you saying that, because that means a lot that a lot of caregivers feel like we did get it accurate.
Oh, 100%. And I want to ask this question throughout the interview to give lots of opportunities to track down the documentary. So let's just start by, how can people find it?
Yeah, we're doing a screening right now in honor of National Family Caregivers Month. So if you go to caregiverdoc.com/NOV, like for November, or just caregiverdoc.com, you can find it. You'll see where you can rent the film and watch during the month. And we also made a promo code for your listeners. If you use Empowered, that will get you a discount on the ticket too.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I will be sure to share that on my social media and on Civic Media's social media as well, because everybody should absolutely see this. So the name of the documentary is Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. After the journey of making this documentary, can you tell me who the we is in that title and why you think we are failing family caregivers?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think we is kind of everyone. it's, you know, oftentimes family members, friends, it's organizations, it's workplaces, it's our larger government systems and, you know, policies. And that's really what we discovered, is that on so many levels, caregivers are really just being kind of pushed to the side. We heard story after story of people saying, like, even their close friends and family just don't understand. They're not really motivated to try to figure it out, or, you know, they're just kind of like, you guys have something different going on. I'm not really gonna, you know, delve into that, which is heartbreaking for a family that needs support. And then we hear from people at work who lose their job because their companies aren't willing to make some, you know, basic accommodations just for them to be able to keep their job. I mean, of course, we hear countless stories of people who have, you know, there's state programs and benefits that they're entitled to, but they're constantly fighting to get them, or they're there, but they're unfunded. So just that was what was so difficult about working on this project, is it's just we kept seeing the so many barriers that families are up against. And that was what was frustrating, and what showed us that something like this really needed to bring that story to light, so others like ourselves could realize, you know, there are lots of places we can make a difference.
I like that, and especially that you mentioned sometimes it's within these people's own families. And this is something that I kind of preach on this show, is that being a caregiver is a familial duty, right? It's something that we are going to take on regardless. And I feel like a lot of people just feel like each of us are dealt our own, you know, hand in life. And some are luckier than others, but what they're not understanding is this isn't making sure that somebody has a roof over their head and three meals a day. This is an intensive all the time job, and there's consequences. You know, there's things that the caregiver goes through because of that. So I just throw that out there, because it's something that I always grapple with when people, you know, I try to bring awareness to caregiver issues, and sometimes I feel like people just don't get it, because they feel like, well, that's what you do when you're a part of a family. So thank you for pointing that out, that sometimes the people failing are just the family members within their own unit. So mm-hmm. The second half of the documentary title is of Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters, is the why it matters part. Now, I know for me why it matters, but I'm curious what your takeaway is after going on this journey, why it matters.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few answers to that question. I think the most top of mind one is, you know, the idea that all of us are going to either be caregivers or need caregiving at some point in our lives. And as a society, if we don't put more importance on that, it's going to affect all of us, right? And so why would we not want to put more focus on that? The other one, which is talked about in the film a lot, and hearing it from Jess and these other parents, can be so raw, but it's, you know, the child, you know, being only as healthy as the caregiver, right? I mean, you have to have healthy caregivers to provide quality care for these individuals and these children. And so it matters on multiple levels. And I think that if, as communities and as a society, if we were to elevate the importance that we place on caregiving, you know, it would make a big difference in a lot of people's lives.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, it matters economically. I mean, my hearts go mm-hmm. out to all of these families, and they deserve quality care and support. But if they were to throw in the towel, these families across the nation, I mean, they are the backbone of the nation, and we cannot sustain the cost that it would take for somebody to provide that 24/7 care. So we absolutely need to mm-hmm. take care of the caregivers.
You're talking about millions and millions of people. So yeah. Anything that affects that many people is going to have wide-ranging effects on our community, you know, economically, systemically, in the workforce, that kind of thing. So it's kind of, you know, of course it matters. It's so easy to brush under the rug, but it once you dive into this and you see how many people it affects, you know, it's hard not to see that it matters.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times somebody maybe knows one person in that position. So they think that's one person going through that. No, that's millions of people. And so it does have a huge impact in all areas of society. I'm Liza Hellenbrand. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver. I am talking with Amanda and Tom Dyer, directors of the award-winning documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. I have to say this documentary really hit home for me. And one thing I didn't give you guys any insight on is my own personal story. And that is, I have a son with autism that was diagnosed at 2 years old. And I'm not going to say that my situation was similar to the Ronnie's, or they would have full right to get on an airplane and come over here and slap me, because that is not the case. My son is off in college. You know, he made huge gains and we're in a good place. And that's why I am here today doing what I'm doing, because I can, and because I know there's so many that cannot. But for me, during those early years, it was all intensive. I mean, he did 32 hours of ABA therapy, occupational therapy, vision therapy, speech therapy. He had sensory issues where he would only eat one or two foods. So we did just so many different therapies, and it was all consuming. And there's more to that story, and I would like to hear your take on it after this short commercial break.
Hello?
Man, where are you? This wedding is lit. I thought you were coming.
Ooh, I can't. I'm in bed with the flu.
The flu? You didn't get a flu shot?
I wish I did. I can't believe I'm missing out on Greg's wedding.
Whoa. Grandma's about to crowd surf.
Grandma's about to what? What?
Man, I'll call you back.
Oh, man.
Sounds like another case of flu FOMO. Don't get stuck at home with the flu. A flu shot is safe, effective, and you can get it at the same time as your COVID-19 vaccine. A flu shot is the best way to prevent the flu and its potentially serious complications. It keeps you protected and also protects your loved ones. Protecting our community can't wait. So why get stuck inside with the flu? Don't get flu FOMO. Learn more at getmyflushot.org.
Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I have two amazing guests with me, Amanda Dyer and her husband, Tom, who are the directors of the documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. So before we went into that little something-something, I was sharing the story of my son. So I had a son that was diagnosed with autism at 2. We did all of the therapies. When we weren't doing therapies, I was researching other therapies we could be doing and coordinating all these different people and pieces. And it was really a full-time job. And I didn't know it until then. I mean, I didn't know it then. And to be honest, I just started discovering it really over the past few months, how much that journey impacted me. And, you know, after his diagnosis to when he went off to college, my medical chart just started to grow. I mean, it started out with chronic fatigue, anxiety, depression, fibromyalgia, and my own health was declining. And I never made that connection that, oh, maybe it's because of everything that's going on. And I don't think a lot of people do make that connection. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about the health implications. Nate, if you could play the first clip.
I sure can.
You're constantly in some form of a survival mode. And when that happens for years upon years upon years, it weighs on you and it begins to tear away at every aspect of your life. And your mental health is going to change.
I'm just curious, with you two spending so much time with the Ronnie family, how did it impact your physical and mental health? I mean, did you notice a difference?
I don't know if, I think what I noticed, was just, so much of caregiving takes place in the home, mm-hmm. and it takes place behind closed doors and away from, neighbors, away from friends, away from the community. And so, it was easier for us being up close in person with them to see how, families can be so acutely affected by these things. I mean, you know, these families are not only responsible, these parents are not only responsible for 100% of themselves, but they're responsible for 100% of somebody else. And that's a lot to ask of an individual. So it's definitely easy to see how personal, mental, and physical health can suffer at that. I don't think that's something that we really experienced, because I don't think that we were, you know,
we could go home and not have the same
right.
concerns.
At the end of the day,
I've got to imagine there had been some days where you went home and that particular day just took a lot out of you.
Yeah, for sure.
And we were in the thick of the production during the pandemic. And so that added a layer of intrigue to the whole process. And they actually mentioned that one of the therapists in the film mentions this even, that was the first glimpse, like the lockdown for, you know, a short period of time that everyone kind of participated in, was the first glimpse that a lot of us had about what it means, about how caregivers live a big portion of their lives. Because if you have someone who's, you know, compromised, or it's just difficult to get out of your house because the world is not accessible, you know, you spend a lot more of your time in isolation. And we saw all the health, negative mental and physical health effects that had on everyone in our communities. And that's just a taste of what many caregivers are dealing with day to day. So I think that was really timely that was kind of happening. And it also contributed to, with like the school schedule being interrupted, the Ronnie family having to constantly adapt and change the routine, losing their providers, things like that. Like, it just made it so much more complicated. And I mean, really, I think they were in some of their hardest days at the times we were trying to produce this. And in a way that was powerful, because there's always somebody in their darkest days. Right. So we feel like that's, you know, a good, like, the Ronnies are doing better now. They moved to a different state, have gotten some different resources, made some changes and things that have really benefited them as a family. But even I've heard Jess say, you know, she's like, there's always, we're doing better right now, but there's always someone who's in the depths and hasn't found those resources yet. So we're glad the documentary shows those hard parts.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a couple things. I like how you mentioned COVID, because you're right, with all of the heartache and sorrow and everything that went along with COVID, to me, it really emphasized caregivers and caregiver needs. It really put a spotlight on it. I mean, people were forced to look at it, because the care providers weren't there. These people were in the homes. You know, people, a lot of it came out of it. When you look at the caregiver research and what they're proposing, a lot of it really stemmed from what they learned during the pandemic. And you know what? I just want to step back one minute and just share that a lot of the families in this film were probably had children that most likely back in the 50s or 60s would have been institutionalized. And so, you know, somewhere along the 70s, they caught wind that these institutions really weren't more than warehouses for people with disabilities, and it was in no way for them to live, and they started closing them down, which is a good thing. But then that meant that those kiddos are now in the home with parents with no support and limited resources and sometimes limited knowledge. And I just wanted to share that because everybody's caregiving experience looks a little different, but the people that you interviewed, for my takeaway, were the people that are probably honestly really struggling the most.
Yeah, I mean, there were some extreme circumstances that a lot of these families were in, and everyone's experience was different, and they all had their own individual experience. And I think what was just surprising to us was how similar a lot of their responses were with just what they were dealing with mentally and from a support perspective. Even though their experiences were so different, a lot of the things that they were struggling with were similar.
We're very same. Yeah. I'm sure that makes perfect sense. And, you know, a lot of them were talking about respite and the need for self-care and how you can preach all you want about needing self-care, making time for self-care. But when you have somebody that needs you 24/7, that is not a reality. Mm-hmm. So just real quickly, I'm just curious, what do you think would be a good first step for us as a society to getting the caregivers the support they need? Have you ever thought about that over dinner?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard to narrow it down, but I think one thing is just being a friend. Like, it doesn't have to be this grand gesture. A lot of caregivers just want a friend they can count on who will listen to them, and that's not hard to do. So just starting there is so approachable and something that anybody can do.
Amen. I love that. Let's end on a happy note. We'll be back after this short whatever it is.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
As long as there are veterans, the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks will never forget them. Throughout the year, Elks members in your community lend a hand, donate money, volunteer time to enrich the lives of this nation's veterans. It's not something these dedicated Americans feel they have to do. It's something they want to do. Join with America's veterans in saluting the efforts of your local Elks Lodge. Elks Care, Elks Share. To find a lodge nearest you, log on to elks.org. In the past, you were involved with the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks. Today, your local Elks Lodge and community needs your help more than ever. Why? Because needs for helping the youth, veterans, and our communities are greater than available resources. Please consider becoming involved again. Contact your local Elks Lodge and see how little it costs to become reinstated. Visit our website at elks.org. Elks Care, Elks Share.
A message from your Wisconsin Rapids Elks Lodge, number 693.
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Celebrating 75 years.
We got something going here in Madison.
On the ice.
Shoots and scores again.
Against the boards.
He hangs on. Badgers kill off the major.
Between the pipes.
Redirect another fantastic stop.
This is Badger Hockey.
Shoots one, scores. Wow.
It's everything.
For the win, he shoots and scores.
Badger hockey lives here.
Keep it going, baby!
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Brittany, how many barometers do you own? It's a meteorologist thing.
Tell us the truth.
I've got 4 in my house right now.
That's not terrible.
I scaled down.
How many did you used to have?
I give them as gifts now.
Are you re-gifting me a barometer, Brittany?
We're down to 4. That sounds manageable.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. It's fully leaded education talk. Hard facts with a humorous twist. Check out Busted Pencils Tuesdays at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR, and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, what brings you to the clinic today?
Oh, the baby's not feeling well. I think she might have a fever.
Aw, well, let's check her temp with the Exergen thermometer. You're right. These Exergen thermometers are very accurate. Reads 101.2.
Oh, gosh. Well, that Exergen thermometer sure is fast and easy to use.
Yes, and many doctors recommend Exergen for home use.
Exergen thermometers, backed by over 100 clinical studies, are available at Walmart and participating retailers. Learn more at Exergen.com.
Be a part of the resistance. Check out the Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR, and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. 50 today, under clear skies, winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 31 tonight. Overcast skies, tomorrow, 45. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 22.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hallenbrand. Today, I am speaking with Amanda and Tom Dyer, who were the directors and creators of the award-winning documentary Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. You know what? I want to give you guys just a second to toot your own horn. I saw all of the awards that you won on the bottom of the trailer, but tell me about them. What were some of the highlights? What people are noticed? What awards have you won?
Yeah, I don't even.
Do we have the list?
Yeah,
have so probably one that I'm definitely excited about was the Knoxville Film Festival. We won, I think, the documentary category, which we're from Tennessee. So that one was, you know, it's close to our hearts. And then a couple of them were film festivals that we were invited to participate in. And I think that was cool because it's, you know, you can submit yourself to film festivals, but they approached us because they heard about the film and wanted to feature it. So that was definitely cool. There were some around like women's issues and healthcare issues. So them finding the film and wanting to share it with their audiences was definitely, you know, feels good when people see that as a tool that they can use.
Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I think, I just think one of the best things about it to us was just that a film like this was getting attention from people who were looking at films and a place where I'm not sure film festivals is a place where topics like this usually make a big splash. So it felt good that people were interested in hearing these stories, right? And that these stories were getting some attention, because that was the whole purpose of what we were doing, was to try and get this experience in front of people who were not used to it.
Well, you deserve every award that you won and more, because not only did you make a beautiful, wonderful piece of art, for lack of a better word, documentary, but you did. You really opened the door to change the hearts and minds of people and continue this fight that we're fighting for these caregivers. So I can't thank you enough. But, you know, in addition to the caregiver stories and interviews that you had on the film, you also had some amazing people speaking on the issue. One being social worker Crystal Polk. Crystal just hit the nail on the head over and over in this film. And I wanted to play one clip, which she was talking about screening for caregivers. If you want my Nate playing the clip two.
Parent caregivers are more prone to different physical illnesses because of their mental health. We are not targeting this population. We're not screening them appropriately. Professionals don't look at them the same way as the identified patient, which is the child who has a disability. So practitioners and professionals don't screen them the same way as the mother who has a newborn, for example. She goes back to her doctor and she's screened for postpartum depression. Or maybe the returning veteran is screened for PTSD because they're more prone to be at risk for those diagnoses. So we're looking for that to make sure that we're treating them appropriately and they're getting the resources they need. We're not doing that with this population, and that's really unfortunate. They are unseen and they deserve more attention, more mental health resources, and more interventions for the family because it's going to benefit them and the family unit, which in turn helps everybody.
That is so powerful and so true. As I shared how my medical chart continued to grow with symptoms and problems and ailments as I continued my caregiving journey, not once did a doctor ever ask me if I was a caregiver or what that entailed or what my stressors were or my, you know, mental wellness during the journey. What did you hear from caregivers about the support that they received from their primary physicians?
Yeah, that was one thing we definitely wanted to include because we heard many stories about how, you know, parents are spending, especially if your child has a rare disease or some kind of medical complexity and in the hospital, you know, you're having to basically function as a nurse a lot of your day, or you're in and out of the hospital. You are used to interacting with medical professionals constantly, but so many parents told us that no one really ever asked about them, even though, you know, they might be living at the hospital for weeks or months on end, and everyone just kind of assumes you're figuring it out. Or they're, you know, annoyed with you that you didn't get something done or didn't get some therapy done or didn't do some appointment you were supposed to do, just not really having any understanding or compassion for the fact that your day is booked solid with all these tasks and you have a household to run. So we've been working with some children's hospitals and universities as well to do screenings of the film as a way to educate providers. You know, they know their area of expertise, of course, but, you know, the caregiver really has a role in that conversation as well. So trying to use the film as a tool to kind of just open minds to say, oh, we need to consider the caregiver in this equation as well. So, yeah, you would think that was an area where it wouldn't really, the story would already be understood, but that wasn't the case at all.
Thank you so much for doing that, because in my mind, that's kind of where the caregiver journey, I don't want to say should start, but it needs to be implemented in the medical system. You know, I said earlier, I struggle with this caregiver concept, I struggle reaching caregivers because so many people don't identify themselves as a caregiver. So to have that screening in, you know, your annual physical could be huge, because what they don't tell you, nobody tells you, who would tell you that when you're a caregiver, your rate of anxiety, depression, obesity, heart disease, so many different conditions just skyrockets due to the stress that you're constantly putting on your body. So for me, the doctor's office is such a great place to start. So thank you for going into the hospitals and doing that work around it. It is so needed.
I was definitely surprised to learn that not people don't always identify as a caregiver as part of this project. You know, you're like, well, I'm a parent, or I'm a daughter, or a brother. You know, you kind of have these other family roles that you do identify as, and that's fine if that's not how someone wants to identify. But yeah, I think that makes it easy to forget that it is a very critical role, and it has so many effects on every aspect of your life. So yeah, I hope more people embrace that role as something to be honored and respected and valuable.
They should. I think that they should wear it as a badge of honor. And I don't think it's something that you need to necessarily identify as. You know, I never went to a doctor's appointment and said, I am my son's caregiver and also his mom. No, you know, it's just kind of a given. But the biggest thing for me is why I want to work on the self-identification component of it is because of all of the implications to your physical, mental, and financial health. That part of being a caregiver is something that people should really be aware of. And like I said, when you're caught in the thick of it, you're not. So, I could go on and on, but I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the resource end of it. You know, finding the right support and resources can be exhausting in its own right. And you touched on that a little bit. Many families feel like the larger system is failing them, that the supports are not there, the resources are not there, the systems are hard to navigate. Like you said, all the focus is put on the child and not the family. In your journey of making this documentary, what did you learn about navigating these systems and how much paperwork and legwork goes into making things happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously what we learned about it was all through Jess and her family and what they were going through. It wasn't anything that we experienced firsthand, but seeing and hearing the struggles that they dealt with, where it was just dead end after dead end. And you would put so much work into this avenue only to get so far down it and realize, oh, that's not going to work for reason A or whatever it is. You know, there seemed to be roadblock after roadblock in a lot of these cases. I remember one of the early things that just shocked me was talking with Ryan was about how there were, you know, when they moved to Tennessee, there were systems, there were policies in place that they were planning on taking full advantage of to help their family. And when they were unable to get that, the reasons that they were given were like, oh, well, yes, we're supposed to have this in place, but we don't have the money or we don't have the staff. And it just seemed so difficult for families to just even chase after these things that are advertised or at least, you know, on a website somewhere that, sure, hey, we have this resource. And then once you start digging into that, it doesn't always end up what it seems like it is.
No, I can attest to that firsthand. So my son is doing well, but he still needs support. He's always going to need support. And during the summer, myself, like many other families, qualify for respite funding. Finding respite providers are near impossible, but I had someone. I did all the legwork. I found the person. I made the connections. I made it happen. That person needed to sign up and, you know, do some paperwork and whatever. She was going to meet with him once a week during the summer. Over the course of the entire summer, we worked on paperwork. She never once got paid from that agency. Yeah. I paid her out of pocket on my own. And it wasn't really to give respite to myself. I like I said, my son doesn't have that level of care needed. And quite frankly, now that he's off to college, I like spending time with him. It was also to give him respite from me. You know, sure, it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. And to get him out into the community, because, mm-hmm, you know, when you're 19 years old, going out into the community with mom is not cool. even if I'm the coolest, yeah, mom, it's just not cool, you know. So I totally understand, you know, some of those struggles that you're talking about. And another one was the respite and the quality of respite. One mother said, I get lots of hours. This is what we were talking about before, but there are no respite workers. We need to make this a career with benefits and training. Just again, through, you know, you said, how long did you spend with this family in total?
Well, 2 or 3 years all told.
So over the course of 2 or 3 years, what are some of the takeaways that you learned about the paid respite system?
Yeah, we hear that all the time, that they, I'm entitled to these hours, or I have the funding to pay for them, or even I can, I'm able to pay myself, but I can't find a person who's reliable and trustworthy that will continue to come. And, you know, especially if you need some special training to understand the situation, you don't want to be training someone new every other day. So we hear from parents all the time who are like, I just gave up on that. We just don't, you know, we have a couple of friends or family, maybe if we're lucky, who will help. When they can, but people just give up on it because it doesn't work. And I, you know, it really just, you look at like the rates that they can pay, like the agencies pay, and some of that's controlled by loss. There's so many factors involved here, but across the board, it seems like it's just undervalued as a service, as a profession. And that's fundamentally what we need to change. It needs to not just be a job that's a throwaway job. It should be something that's valued and respected and seen as a career that takes a special skill, and you train and you move up in your career. And we need that to, we need to place more value on the role of care for all of that to work. So it's really this, you know, it's daunting that we need this cultural change, but I feel like we're in a place where we're close to making that happen.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, there's a lot about this movie that is heavy and heart-wrenching, and I would love it if you could stick around just for a few minutes. I know you're probably thinking, what the heck did I sign up for here? But I want this to end on a happy note, and there is some great happy notes within your story, if you don't mind sticking around.
Let's do it.
All right.
Gillette Intimate gives guys a gentle and easy shave on there, and around there, and even under there. Don't treat your groin like junk. Respect it with Gillette Intimate, the best a man can get. Buy now at a retailer near you.
Temperatures getting low, but demand remains high? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. And Indeed's interview tool lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from their website. Visit Indeed.com/credits.
Menards' 11% sale is ending on Thanksgiving Day. Don't miss out. Get a countertop that's durable, affordable, and easy to install. Transform everyday spaces into gathering places with Menards' great selection of countertops. Visit our kitchen showrooms in store or go to Menards.com for your free estimates today. Stores close Thanksgiving, but 11% off remains in effect on Menards.com. Savings are mail-in rebates. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I have been talking with Amanda and Tom Dyer, the director and creators of Unseen, How We Are Failing Family Caregivers and Why It Matters. Before I forget, I want you guys to share once again where people can go to see this film, because everybody should really see this film.
Yeah, we're doing a screening right now in honor of National Family Caregivers Month. So during the month of November, you can go to caregiverdoc.com, caregiverdoc.com, and you can find links there that say rent the film. It'll take you to the right page, and you can access rent the film and access it there.
And I highly recommend everyone do that. I will make sure to put all that information on the on my social medias and Civic Media social media. I believe that there is a code Empowered that I will share that will give you a discount to watch the movie. Like I mentioned, this is a hard topic. This is a heavy topic. This is sometimes a heartbreaking topic. There are many joys, and almost everybody said or would say that they would do it over again, that you know that there's a huge amount of love and there's moments of joy that keep you going. So I just want to end on the final clip, 5, where I thought this lady just nailed it.
Support. I think about my son, and if this child that struggles so much to do things that come so simply for other kids, I mean, he's got academic struggles and social struggles and medical struggles. If this kid can wake up every day, put one foot in front of the other, and take on the day with such strength and bravery, and with many times a smile, then so can I.
I absolutely love that. I do want to take one step back, though, and say, I shouldn't have said that lady, that amazing caregiver warrior shared that beautiful inspiration. And I'm sure that there's lots of bits of this documentary that, how do you guys say it in the film world, ended up on the editing room floor. Why was that quote important to get in?
Yeah, we were so grateful and lucky that so many parents and caregivers were willing to participate and willing to be honest and vulnerable and send us those videos and put themselves out there. I mean, it's such a personal thing. And we had so many people that were so willing to do that. It was important for us to show as well-rounded of an experience throughout the film as we possibly could. And you know, honestly, a big goal of the film was to be very raw and very real. We didn't really want to sugarcoat anything because we felt like it was a disservice to what a lot of families and caregivers deal with.
Thank you.
Yeah, if it ends on a fully happy note, we didn't want anyone walking away from this film thinking, oh, they're fine. And they have what they need. And we wanted people to walk away knowing that they needed help and they needed support. But it's also important to show the happiness, like the inspirational moments that they have. And so, we're just very grateful for everyone that spoke up and was willing to put themselves out there in that way.
And I think we wanted it to be clear that it wasn't about, they're not looking for pity or complaining about their life or anything like that. It was just to say that they're extreme, you know, all these parents love their kids desperately, are passionate about giving them the best life that they possibly can. That's what motivates them to do this. And so we just wanted that to be clear that none of the issues that they bring up is about looking for pity or because they don't like their life. It's just, can't we remove some of the barriers that they're facing where it just doesn't have to be so hard? So that's kind of what we feel like that bit with those parents kind of talk about what their motivation is, that was really powerful.
Well, and you know, Ryan? Is that he said that so beautifully too. You know, he said, this isn't our son's fault. This isn't my fault. This isn't anybody's fault. And I appreciate that you acknowledge that, you know, caregivers aren't looking for pity. It's just that caregivers in today's society, with the demands that are being put on them, which quite honestly continue to grow as resources continue to shrink, right? That it's too much. It's not sustainable. And they're not looking for a trip to Disneyland. They're just looking for ways to get through the day and to take care of themselves and to have, you know, a bit of their own life, their own dreams, their own desires. One woman said in the movie, you really give that up when you are in this situation. But you guys, you just nailed it. It was beautiful. It was such a beautiful documentary. And as somebody that's maybe had a toe in that pond, again, I don't want to say that I was in that situation. That would be so not fair. But I think you just did a beautiful job doing it, especially with the word I can't say, the cinematography. cinematography.
Cinematography. Yes. That's Tommy. It's the credit.
Yes. That was just beautiful. So thank you guys so much. Final question, just a second for you. What's next? What's next for you two?
Oh, good one. So we actually are working on some other projects. We obviously learned a ton as part of this process. And, you know, now that we kind of know what the need is, we definitely have the motivation and just the burden of knowledge on us to try to do more to serve the community. So we've got a couple things in the works. It's too early to say yet. We're, you know, still figuring things out.
You know what? No problem. I am a top-notch Google stalker.
I heard, yes.
I'll find it.
You'll get there.
Yeah, we'll send it to you as soon as it's ready. That is wonderful. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm sorry to keep interrupting. I can't wait for whatever you do, because you guys are both really super, super talented. So good luck on your next project.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, you guys probably didn't know that was coming.
I'm Scarlett Johansson. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. You can join the movement to end hunger by donating, volunteering, and advocating. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/actnow. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you. It's fully leaded education talk.
Hard facts with a humorous twist.
Check out Busted Pencils, Tuesdays at 7 on Locally Grown Radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR, and on the Civic Media app.
The fastest hour in radio, serving truth, justice, and equality with every slice. Outside the Pizza Box with Pizza Mike. Friday nights at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Linda Kenyon. Israel continued its bombardment of Gaza overnight. CBS's Linda Gradstein is following from Jerusalem.
Palestinians said dozens of people were killed in Israeli airstrikes, including on a UN school in the Jabalia refugee camp. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel will continue until Hamas is destroyed and the hostages are brought home. A delegation from the World Health Organization visited the Shifa Hospital in Gaza days after Israeli forces seized the area and called it a death zone. Linda Gradstein for CBS News, Jerusalem.
Jordan's prime minister is accusing Israel of